The door opened. "Captain Blaine?" A clerk called. He entered to stand in front of the table. The admiral held up a paper and cleared his throat. "Unanimous findings of a special court of inquiry convened to examine the circumstances surrounding the loss of His Imperial Majesty's General-class battlecruiser, MacArthur. 1. This court finds that the vessel was lost through accidental infestation by alien life forms and was properly destroyed to prevent contamination of other vessels. 2. This court honorably acquits Her Master Captain Roderick Blaine, ISN of negligence. 3. This court orders the surviving officers of MacArthur to prepare a detailed report of procedures whereby such losses can be prevented in future. 4. This court notes that the search and sterilization of MacArthur was hindered by the presence of a large number of civilian scientists and their equipment property aboard, and that Minister Anthony Horvath, senior scientist, protested the sterilization and advised minimum disruption of the civilian experiments. 5. This court notes that Captain Blaine would have been more diligent in searching his vessel, except for the difficulties noted in point 4, and this court recommends no reprimand for Her Master. These findings being unanimous, this court is adjourned. Captain, you may go."
"Thank you, sir."
"Yeah, that was pretty sloppy, Blaine. You know that, don't you?"
"Yes, sir."
"My God, how many times have I thought about it? But I doubt if anyone in the Navy could have done better. The ship must have been a madhouse with all those civilians aboard." "All right, Senator, he's all yours. They're ready in room 675.
"Good. Thank you, Admiral."
Fowler hustled Blaine out of the hearing room and down the corridor to the elevator. A petty officer had one waiting.
"Now where are we going?" Rod demanded.
675? That's retirement."
"Of course," the Senator said.
They entered the elevator.
"You didn't think you could stay in the Navy and be on that commission, did you? That's why we had to hurry that inquiry through. Until it was on the record, you couldn't be retired."
"But, Senator..."
"Ben, call me Ben."
"Yes, sir."
"Ben, I don't want out. The Navy's my career."
"No more."
The elevator stopped and Fowler hustled Rod out. "You'd have to leave eventually. Family's too important. Can't have the peers neglecting government to go chasing around in those ships all their lives. You knew you'd have to retire early."
"Yes, sir. After my brothers were killed, there wasn't any question of it. But not yet. Look, can't they give me a leave of absence?"
"Don't be an idiot. The Moti question's going to be with us a long time. Sparta's too far away to handle it."
"Here we are."
Fowler led him through the door.
His retirement papers were already made out. Roderick Harold, Lord Blaine, to be promoted to Rear Admiral and placed on the inactive list by order of His Imperial Majesty.
"Retirement pay to be sent where, sir?"
"I beg your pardon?"
"You're entitled to retirement pay. Where do you want us to send it, my lord?"
To the yeoman clerk, Rod was already a civilian.
"Can I donate it to the Navy Relief Fund?"
"Yes, sir."
"Do that."
The clerk wrote rapidly. There were other questions, all trivial. The documents were made out and thrust at him, and the yeoman held out a pen.
"Just sign here, my lord."
The pen was cold in his hand. Rod didn't want to touch it.
"Come on, come on. There are a dozen appointments waiting," Senator Fowler urged. "You and Sally both. Come on, boys, sign."
"Yes, sir." No point in delaying. There's nothing to argue about. If the Emperor himself named me to that damned commission. He scrawled rapidly, then placed his thumbprint on the papers. A taxi whisked them through New Scotland's narrow streets. Traffic was thick, and the cab had no official flags to open holes for them. It was an unusual experience for Rod to travel this way. Usually, he'd had Navy flyers to take him from rooftop to rooftop, and the last time in New Scotland, he'd had his own gig with waiting crew. No more, no more.
"I'll have to buy a flyer and get a chauffeur," Rod said.
"I take a commissioner's rate and air transport license?"
"Surely. You rate anything you want," Senator Fowler said. "In fact, the appointment carries a titular baronage. Not that you need it, but it's another reason why we're getting so popular lately."
"Just how many commissioners will there be?"
I've got discretion on that, too. We won't want too many. The taxi lurched as the driver nearly hit a pedestrian. Fowler took out his pocket computer. Late again. Appointments at the palace. You'll be staying there, of course. Servants' quarters will be crowded, but we'll squeeze your man in. Got anybody? Or you want my secretary to arrange it? Kelly's in Lennon. I guess he'll stay with me. Another good man lost for the Navy. Kelly, how is the old scoundrel?
He's fine.
Glad to hear that. Your father wanted me to ask about him, now I think of it. You know that Marine's my age? I can remember him in uniform when your father was a lieutenant, and that was a long time ago. Where's Sally?
When Rod came out of 675, she had been gone. He'd been just as pleased with his retirement papers bulging in his tunic, he didn't feel much like talking.
Out shopping for clothes, of course. You won't have to do that. One of my people got your sizes from Navy records and brought you a couple of suits. They're at the palace.
Ben?
You're moving pretty fast, Ben, Rod said carefully.
Have to. By the time Lennon orbits, we need some answers. Meanwhile, you've got to study the political situation out here. It's all tied together. ITA wants trade, soonest. Humanity League wants cultural exchanges, ditto. Armstrong wants his fleet to deal with outies, but he's scared of moties. That's got to be settled before Merrill can get on with the reconquest of Trans-Coalsack. Stock markets from here to Sparta are jumpy. Just what will Moti technology do to the economy? What blue-chip companies are going to get ruined? Who gets rich? And every damn bit of that's in our hands, boy. We've got to make the policies.
Oof. The full impact was just hitting him.
What about Sally and the rest of the commission?
Don't be stupid. You and I are the commission. Sally will do what's needed.
You mean what you want her to do? I wouldn't be too sure of that. She's got a mind of her own.
Think I don't know that? I've lived with her long enough. Hell, you're independent, too. I don't expect I can dictate to you.
You've been doing a good enough job so far, Rod thought.
You can guess about the commission, can't you? Ben asked pointedly. Parliament's been concerned about imperial prerogatives. If there's anything that's pure prerogative, it's defense against aliens. But if they're peaceful and all that, Parliament wants a say in the trade deals. Emperor isn't about to turn the Moti question over to government until we're sure what we're up against. But he can't manage this from Sparta. Can't come out here himself. Boy, that would cause problems at the capital. Parliament couldn't stop him from turning it over to Crown Prince Lysander, but the boy's too young. Deadlock. His Majesty's one thing, but appointed agents with imperial powers are another. Hell, I don't want to give imperial authority to anybody but the royal family. One man, one family, can't personally exercise too much power no matter how much they've got in theory. But give them appointed agents, and it's another matter.
What about Merrill? It's his sector.
What about him? Same objections to him as anybody else?
More.
Viceroy's job is pretty carefully defined. Dealing with aliens isn't. Merrill wouldn't get too big for his britches and try to set up his own little empire out here. But history shows one thing damn clear. You got to watch out for that. So it had to be a commission. Parliament's not about to approve that much power for any single man. Not even me. Made me chairman since I've got the votes. Put my niece on it. My brother was more popular than I am. We needed a woman. And here's Sally, just been to the moat. Fine.
But I can't stay out here too long, Rod. Somebody's got to.
That's you.
I saw that coming.
Why me?
You're a natural. Needed your old man's support to get the commission approved anyway. Marquis is pretty popular right now. Done some good work consolidating his sector. Good war record. Besides, you're almost royal family. You're in line for the throne.
About 28th. My sister's boy has a better claim than I do.
Yeah, but it's not spreading the prerogative too far. The peers trust you. Baronage likes your father. Commons, too. And nobody's going to think you want to be king out here. You'd lose Crucis Court. So now the problem is to find a couple of local dummies who'll take their baronages
and go along with you after I leave. You'll have to find yourself a replacement before you can go home. But you'll manage that. I did. Fowler smiled beatifically. The palace loomed up ahead of them. Kilted guards stood outside in ceremonial uniforms. But the officer who checked their credentials against his appointment list before waving them through the gates was a Marine.
"Got to hurry," Senator Fowler said, as they drove around the circular way to the bright red and yellow rock steps.
"Rod, if those Motis are a threat, could you order Kutuzov in there with a battle fleet?"
"Sir?"
"You heard me. What are you smiling about?"
"I had this conversation with one of my officers back at Moat Prime, only I was in your seat."
"Yes, sir. I wouldn't want to, but I could. And I can answer so fast because I decided the question on the way home. Otherwise, I'd have had to tell you to stuff your commission."
He paused a moment. "Sally couldn't, though."
"Wouldn't expect her to. She wouldn't fight it either. Any evidence that would make you or me order something like that would make her resign. Look, I've been over those reports until I'm deaf and blind, and I can't find much wrong. There are a few things, though, like your middies. I'm having trouble swallowing that frog."
"So am I."
The cab pulled up at the palace steps, and the driver opened the doors for them. Rod fished for bills to pay the fare, and he gave too large a tip because he wasn't used to riding in cabs.
"Will that be all, my lord?" the waiter asked.
Rod glanced at his pocket computer.
"Yes, thank you."
"We're going to be late, Sally." He made no attempt to stand. "Angus, we'll have coffee. With brandy."
"Yes, my lord."
"Rod, we really will be late."
Sally didn't get up either. They looked at each other and laughed.
"When was the last time we had lunch together?" she asked.
"A week, two? I don't remember. Sally, I've never been so busy in my life. Right now, a main fleet action would be a relief." He grimaced. "Another party tonight. Lady Reardon. Do we have to go?"
"Uncle Ben says Baron Reardon is very influential on New Ireland, and we may need some support there."
"Then I suppose we have to." Angus arrived with coffee. Rod tasted it and sighed in satisfaction. "Angus, that is the best coffee and brandy I've ever had. Your quality has improved in the last week."
"Yes, my lord. It is reserved for you."
"For me? Sally, is this your—"
"No."
She was as puzzled as he.
"Where did you get it, Angus?"
"A merchant, Captain, personally brought it to Government House, my lady. He said it was for Lord Blaine. The chef tried it, and said it was fit to serve."
"And that it is." Rod agreed enthusiastically. "Who was the captain?"
"I'll find out, my lord."
"Some office seeker," Rod said thoughtfully after the waiter left. "Although you'd think he'd have let me know." He glanced at his computer again. "I suppose we haven't long. We can't keep the Viceroy waiting all afternoon."
"We might as well. You and Uncle Ben won't agree to my suggestion, and—"
"Let's leave that until the conference, sweetheart." The Viceroy was demanding an immediate commission decision on what to do about the Motis. He was only one of many. War Minister Armstrong wanted to know how large a battle fleet it would take to disarm the Motis, just in case, he said, so that Admiral Cranston's War Plans Division could go to work. The Imperial Traders Association insisted that everything Barry knew about trade possibilities be made available to all members. The Grand Deacon of the Church of Him wanted proof that the Motis were angels. Another Himist faction was sure they were devils, and the Empire was suppressing the information. Cardinal Randolph of the Imperial Church wanted tapes of Moti life broadcast on Tri-V to finish the Himists once and for all. And everyone in 200 parsecs wanted a seat on the commission.
"At least we'll be in the same meeting," Sally said.
"Yeah." Their palace quarters were in the same corridor, but they never saw each other except at parties. During the confused blur of the past weeks, Rod and Sally had seldom been in the same conferences. Angus returned and bowed.
"Captain Anderson. Ragnarok, my lord."
"I see. Thank you, Angus. That's an Imperial Autonetics ship, Sally.
Then Mr. Barry sent the coffee and brandy. That was very nice of him.
Yeah, Rod sighed. We really do have to go.
They went upstairs from the executive dining room to Viceroy Merrill's working office. Senator Fowler, War Minister Armstrong, and Fleet Admiral Cranston were waiting impatiently.
Our first lunch together in 2 weeks, Rod explained. My apologies.
They sounded perfunctory.
It won't be so bad when Lenin gets in, Senator Fowler said. Horvath's scientists can make most of the public appearances. They'll eat it up.
Assuming you give them permission to appear, Prince Merrill drawled, you haven't let your protégés say much for all the talking they've done.
Your pardon, Highness, Admiral Cranston said. I'm in a hurry. What do I do about Lenin's arrival? The ship orbits in 60 hours, and I have to send orders to Kutuzov.
We'd have that settled if you'd agree to my suggestion, Uncle Ben, said Sally. Give them quarters in the palace, assign them servants and guards, and let the Motis decide whom they want to see.
She has a point, Benji, Merrill observed. After all, they are the representatives of a sovereign power. Hard to justify keeping them penned up, eh? Make a big stink, and for what?
Admiral Kutuzov is convinced the Motis are a threat, the war minister said. He says they are very persuasive. Give them a chance to speak to whom they will, and there is no telling what they might do. They could make political trouble for us, Your Highness, and we do no need that.
But you have to agree that 3 Motis aren't any military threat, Sally insisted.
Benjamin Fowler sighed heavily.
We've been over this before. It isn't the military threat I worry about. If we turn the Motis loose, they will make deals. Barry's report convinces me of that. The Motis can get interest groups formed to support them, negotiate trade agreements.
The Commission has a veto on any agreement, Uncle Ben.
Harder to kill a deal than see one isn't made to begin with. Look, if the Motis are everything Horvath thinks they are, peaceful, anxious to sell or give us new technology, no competition for living space, and how in hell can he know that? No military threat, never going to ally with the Outies.
Admiral Cranston growled deep in his throat.
And all the rest of it, even if they're all that and more, they are still problems. For one thing, their technology is going to shake up the whole empire. We can't just turn all that loose without some plans for readjustment.
Labor people are onto that, Merrill said dryly. President of IFL was in here not an hour ago demanding that we bottle up the Motis until his staff can study unemployment problems. Not against new technology, but wants us to be cautious. Can't say I blame him.
The ITA isn't solid anymore either, Rod added. At Lady Malcolm's last night, a couple of traders told me they've got second thoughts about Motis.
Rod fingered the lapels of his brightly colored knit tunic. Civilian clothes fit better and should have been more comfortable than Navy uniform, but they didn't seem more comfortable.
Damn it, I don't know what to say. I've been so busy with meaningless speeches and conferences and these goddamn parties, I haven't had a chance to do any constructive thinking.
Of course, Merrill soothed. Still in all, my lord, my orders from HM are clear. I have to take the advice of your commission, and I am still waiting for that advice. Lady Sandra,
Sally, please.
She'd never liked her given name. For no reason, she could have told anyone.
Lady Sally has at least offered us something. Senator, you and Blaine have to do more than protest that you don't know enough.
That is the small matter of my fleet, Armstrong put in. I must know if Cranston's battleships can go back to chasing Outies, or must they stand by in this corner of the sector? We'll have more revolts if we do not show the flag in the distant provinces.
Same demands? Rod asked.
Aye. They want ships of their own. More say in Imperial policy, too, but mostly the ships.
'Tis enough to drive me mad.
They have control of their internal affairs. They do no pay more taxes than we. When the Outies stir about, they shout for the Navy, and we come. But these are no your problems, my lord. If we truly need ships to defend mankind from alien monsters, I'll find them for you if I hate to work in McPherson's yards myself.
would almost be worthwhile if the Motis were hostile, Merrill said thoughtfully. A real threat to the Empire would consolidate the provinces. Wonder if we could sell that story to the barons.
Your Highness, Sally protested.
Just a thought, just a thought.
Dazzle 'em with footwork, Fowler growled.
They all turned to stare at him.
It's obvious. Let the press corps have a field day. When Lennon gets in, we'll put on a show like New Scotland's never seen. Big reception for the Motis, full honors, lots of formalities, parades, reviews, tours, conferences with the Foreign Office people. Nobody can object if the Moti public appearances are ceremonial and the Foreign Office monopolizes the rest of their time. Meanwhile, we get to work. Your Highness, we'll have advice for you as soon as possible. But Leonid, His Majesty did not send me out here to make snap judgments. Until I know more, we'll just have to make do.
49. Parades. The landing boat settled on the roof of the palace with a high-pitched whine of jets dying to a low rumble. Then, silence. A long roll of drums began outside. The martial sound filtered into the cabin, then blared as the entryway was opened. David Hardy blinked into morning sunlight, bright on the varicolored stones of the palace. He sniffed fresh air with no smell of ships and men and filters, and felt the warmth of New Cal. His feet sensed solid rock below. Home.
Honor guard! Attention!
Oh, Lord, they're going all out, David thought.
He squared his shoulders and moved down the ramp as cameramen focused their zoom lenses. Other naval officers and civilians followed. Dr. Horvath was the last, and when he appeared, David nodded to the officer in charge.
"Present arms!"
Snap, crack. 50 pairs of white gloves made identical motions and slapped their weapons at identical times. 50 scarlet sleeves, heavy with gold braid, poised in geometrical precision. The drum roll swelled louder and faster. The Motis came down the ramp. They blinked at New Cal's sunlight. Trumpets blared a salute, then halted with the drum roll. The silence was broken only by faint traffic sounds from streets half a kilometer away. Even the newsmen on their high platform were still. The Motis swiveled their bodies rapidly about. Curiosity. A human world at last, and humans who governed. Yet what were they doing? Ahead were two lines of 25 Marines in rigid pose, their weapons held in what could not be a comfortable position, all identical and obviously not threatening anyone. But Ivan automatically swiveled to look behind for his warriors. To their right were more of these Marines, but they carried noisemakers, not weapons, and several carried banners with colors dipped. Three more carried weapons, and a fourth held up a larger banner that was not dipped. Symbols they'd seen before. Crown and spaceship. Eagle, sickle and hammer. Directly ahead, past the clump of people from Lennon and MacArthur, were more humans in a wild array of clothing. They were obviously waiting to speak to the Motis, but they did not speak. Captain Blaine and Miss Fowler, Jock twittered. Their posture indicates that the two in front of them receive deference. David Hardy led the Motis forward. The aliens were still wrinkling their noses, and they chattered among themselves in musical tones.
"If the air is distasteful," David said, "we can build filters. I hadn't noticed that ship's air distressed you."
He took another lungful of the clean, precious stuff.
"No, no, it's only a bit flat and tasteless," said a mediator. It was impossible to tell the two apart. "Then there's the extra oxygen. I think we'll need that."
"Gravity?"
"Right." The Moti squinted toward the sun. "We'll also need dark glasses."
"Certainly."
They reached the end of the lines of honor guards. Hardy bowed to Merrill. Both mediators did likewise in perfect imitation. The white stood erect for a moment, then bowed, but not so deeply as the others. Dr. Horvath was waiting.
"Prince Stefan Merrill, Viceroy to His Imperial Majesty for Trans-Coalsack Sector," Horvath announced.
Your Highness, the ambassador from Oat Prime. He is called Ivan.
Merrill bowed formally, then indicated Benjamin Fowler. Senator Benjamin Bright Fowler, Lord President of the Imperial Commission Extraordinary. Senator Fowler is empowered to speak with you in the name of the Emperor, and he has a message for you from His Majesty. The Motis bowed again. Senator Fowler had allowed his valet to dress him properly. All the billions of humanity would eventually see recordings of this meeting. He wore a dark tunic with no decoration, but a small golden sunburst on the left breast. His sash was new. His trousers fit perfectly and vanished into the tops of gloves' soft, gleaming boots. He thrust a black Malacca cane with carved gold head under his left arm as Rod Blaine held out a parchment. Fowler read in his official speeches voice. In debates, he was a firebrand, but his formal speeches were stilted. This one was no exception.
Leonidas IX, by grace of God, Emperor of Humanity, to the representatives of the Mote civilization, greetings and welcome. For 1,000 years, mankind has searched for brothers in the universe. We have dreamed of them for all our history.
The message was long and formal, and the Motis listened in silence. To their left, a knot of men hustled and whispered together, and there were some pointed instruments the Motis recognized as badly designed Tri-V cameras. There was a forest of cameras, and far too many men. Why did the humans need so many to do a simple task? Fowler finished the message. He followed the Moti gaze without turning his head.
"The gentlemen of the press," he murmured. "We'll try to keep them from bothering you."
Then he held up the parchment to show the Imperial seal and presented it to the Motis. "They obviously expect a reply. This is one of the formal events Hardy warned us of. I have no idea what to say. Have you?"
"Jock." "No, but we must say something."
The Master spoke.
"What have they said to us?"
"I could translate, but it would be meaningless. They have welcomed us in the name of their Emperor, who appears to be an overmaster. The short, round one is mediator to this emperor."
"Ah! We have at last found one who can communicate. Speak to her."
"But he has said nothing."
"Say nothing in return."
"We are very grateful for your emperor's welcome. We believe this first meeting between intelligent races will be a historic occasion, perhaps the most important event in all our histories. We are eager to begin trade and the mutual enrichment of Motis and mankind."
"You sound like Horvath."
"Of course. Those were his words. He used them often before the humans destroyed their lesser ship. We must know why they did that."
"You will not ask until we know more of humans."
The Motis stood blinking in a silence that stretched embarrassingly. They obviously had no more to say. "Doubtless you are tired from your journey," Merrill said. "You will want to rest in your quarters before the parade begins." When the Motis did not reply, Merrill waved his hand slightly. The band struck up a march, and the Motis were ushered toward an elevator.
"We'll get you away from the goddamn press corps," Fowler muttered. "Can't do anything in a goldfish bowl."
He turned to smile for the cameras.
So did the others,
and they were still smiling as the elevator door closed in the faces of the reporters, who had rushed forward when they saw that the Motis were leaving. There were no obvious spy eyes in the rooms, and the doors had inside locks. There were many rooms, all with very high ceilings. There were 3 rooms with what the humans thought were beds for Motis, and each of those rooms was adjoined by a room with waste disposal and washing facilities. In another room were a refrigerator, flame, and microwave stoves, large stocks of food, including the stores brought by the Motis, implements for eating and equipment they did not recognize. Still another room, the largest of all, held a big polished wood table and both Moti and human chairs. They wandered through the vast spaces. "A Tri-V screen," Jock exclaimed. He turned the controls and a picture appeared. It was a tape of themselves listening to the message from the Emperor. Other channels showed the same things, or men talking about the Moti arrival, or...
A big man in loose clothing was shouting. His tones and gestures indicated rage.
"Devils! They must be destroyed! The legions of him will go forth against the legions of hell!"
The shouting man was cut off and replaced by another man, also in loose clothing, but this one did not shout. He spoke calmly. "You have heard the man who calls himself the voice of him. It is, of course, not necessary for me to say it, but speaking for the church, I can assure you that the Motis are neither angels nor devils, merely intelligent beings much like us. If they are a threat to humanity, it is not a spiritual one, and His Majesty's servants will certainly be more than adequate to deal with them."